Even though it's meant that we had to redirect traffic so that it moves into King Williamstown and then to smaller towns of Beaufort, Highway, Cookhouse, up to Cradock, and then into join the national road that's coming from the city. But the design of the road that goes into Adelaide isn't meant for big trucks. So the second round that you guys on that road are so huge. If you drive on it now, the trucks are just destroying the on that first point, that there's a huge issue that I think the policy level is going to deal with. How do you deal with the logistics and transport cost of areas that were historically disadvantaged from the transport point of view? That's the question for me. And I'm not too sure that the provincial administration has the infrastructure capacity to do that thing. In those areas, the road has been called as of the two. So the provincial and for you to make major investments on the trees, and just to go in the world, I'm not too sure that the administration has the capacity to go in that point. I said earlier on yesterday, I think I've responded to the question that Honorable McIntosh has raised on the implications of the detour. So a detour has been created and creating a second round of problem of destroying even a smaller road. I don't know if it's smaller, because all of the trucks, they chew them, they cause all sorts of damage, they hit cattle and everything that moves. So that's the issue. On the ICT question that Honorable Hazard, I think, raised, that there are ICT processes. I think that although the presentation to the Cultural Committee is not really about ICT, the feedback we're getting from industry is that electricity prices, when they shoot up as a result of both the decisions by NERSA and ESCOM, and also by the municipality, create an additional element. And some of these industries are really like small to medium sized industries that supply the auto sector inside. So on the one hand, the government is pushing for greater local procurement. And some of these industries, as they try and get into that, they are all burdened by that. Why they don't raise those issues in the IDP consultation forum, I'm not very clear. But it was a very consistent message, especially in the small and medium sized ones. I think what they are bargaining power is very limited, because when big industries, you know, kind of raise these issues, you know, the municipality, including the mayor, tends to react quite quickly. When some of the smaller sized ones are confronted with challenges, they have a direct impact on their balance sheet, on their cash flow, and their risk flows. And these are industries that you normally gear to continue to support the big guys in the auto sector. And they go and the auto sector is then going to cost you in part when it not in part. Let me take on, I think to some extent I've responded to Honorable Sue's question on Koha and so on. I think that the investments themselves are starting to bear fruit to some extent. I think the question that the Greenhouse was raising was, from an employment point of view, we're moving to a high deficit in overtime. And the recession that we saw recently is getting better. So on the one hand, the net impact on jobs is not significant. So you have a new industry that moves into Kuala and the dairy production plant is doing better than exporting. The guys are exporting tomatoes and so on. There's a new Chinese plant and we build now in Wuhan, etc. But those are coming on stream at a point where you have a massive deficit on employment, especially in the world. So the implications are simple. Just due to migrate and so on. So on the high end skills that require the industry, I think that's really the competence of the provincial administration. Don't deal with the risk that the team is on. Let me stop there.
On the question of unfettered imports, I mean, it hasn't been our role to deal directly with particular state agencies, with SARS or with national regulator of compulsory certification. But these issues have been raised with national departments, and particularly by the provincial departments. yes, we do try and channel what we hear from industrialists and from organised labour for that matter through the right channels and hope that they get dealt with. Various members, I think, asked questions about Kenya issues. I think we were just raising the question of why Eastern Cape, which is two-thirds rural province, sees so little contribution to the provincial GDP from the rural sector. And one of the big issues that comes up every time in Kenya, related to that, was the issue of restitution. And unfortunately, the restitution process continues to be extremely slow. And we were at an area called Guba Farms, where the local community, which is in the former Transvaal, the local community has been granted farms, but I think 8 years ago they were given this land back, but support from government and completion of the process has just not taken place. So people are surviving on a kind of subsistence level on these farms when they could be highly productive. I mean, that's just one example of the slowness of the restitution process. There's obviously the issue of all those people who did not receive restitution for betterment, which continues to be an ongoing process. And there are tens of thousands of those people in a major ongoing campaign. I'm sure honourable members would know about this in the Eastern Cape. The betterment issue is still sort of in limbo. I think on the issue of our relationship with municipalities about electricity issues, we do as an organisation offer support, technical support to the two metros, but there are ongoing difficulties in that area which are not being rapidly resolved, unfortunately. But we are continuing to work on those issues. Just on the issue of, I think Mr. Intervenes covered the issue of what happens when you have a reducing tax base for municipalities, and the two major metros have seen this because of the slow hemorrhaging away of industry. Their tax base has been reduced, and inevitably the ability through IDPs or through the local economic development component of IDPs, through IDPs, to support industry and promote industrial development is reduced. So it's a kind of vicious spiral, if you like, of reducing tax base, reducing ability of the municipalities to be a suitable home for modern industry, increasing of service charges, and a gradual slide downwards. That's the unfortunate reality. On the green economy, it's true that this was not mentioned in our presentation. The Provincial Department of Economic Development has done quite a bit on this issue and has several summits, but I agree we should have raised that as a particular issue.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brinker. If there is, in fact, both you and your colleague in Swabeni, if there's something outstanding, this will be communicated to you, subcommittee secretary, and we would expect a written response. Of course, if you'd like to add anything, you're also welcome to. You've heard some of the concerns raised out this morning. And if you would do that in writing to us, because I think it would be required by next Tuesday or something, and I'll correct you. So thank you very much for being here with us. And we now have the National Association of Automobile Manufacturers of South Africa, NAMSA. Are you utilising that as well? Laptop, you would just come forward. We've actually met before, Mr. Powell, where you hosted us there, showing us around the plant. And of course, that fired our enthusiasm. So there we are, we're here again, following up. And you are the president of NAMSA, but also managing director of VWSA. And then you've got alongside you Mr. Jay Nemeth, the CEO and Group Managing Director of Ford Motor Company of Southern Africa. So there we are, two colleagues, as it were. I'm correct, from different companies. but joined together as some sort of hip with numbers. Okay. Thank you very much. Only yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Once you compare so close to each other, that's right. What I'd like to do in a few minutes is take you through some charts which explain to you the context of the South African water industry and then also the challenges of beginning it. And this panel will then give you this industry level of our training, this panel will give you a report to that text on it and see that the strong confluence of the topics. If we could start off just looking quickly at the global environment, things are not that bad in the global water boat world. The markets are up up to 9 months with 0.8%. But you can see there is one major economic region in the world which is significantly down in Western Europe, and I show this because many South African water makers do export to Western Europe. And that's the significant shape of the chart. That's a relatively positive picture despite the world in the world that the markets are up 8%. If you look at the long term trend of automotive demand globally, you can also see there is a sustained growth, but you can also see it is quite a volatile market, and we have to, if we want to be major exporters from South Africa, we have to accept that there's extreme volatility, despite the fact that the long term sustainable growth trend. The next chart shows the implications of where the growth is happening in the world. The bottom of the chart you'll see, if you go back some decades, we had a market of 30 million, PV from 1980 to almost 40 million, from 1990 to almost 50 million, 2000 to almost 60 million, 2010 to almost 80 million, and 2011 80 million production. But you can see the interesting thing in this chart, or the most relevant thing in this chart, is not the growth. The fact that the growth is not happening in the traditional first world countries, the growth is happening ourselves in South Africa that we can become a supplier to our trade agreement with these countries that we using our production capacity for that can become a supplier to these markets, not to Indian and Chinese producers. So it's a very important chart in terms of the road ahead. The APDP program, I would assume the members are all familiar with, so I'm not going to dwell on it in any detail unless there's a specific question on it, Madam Chair, unless you'd like to become any specific in the APDP program, which you are allowed to continue the challenge that we have in the industry.
The critical areas, in particular, you know, those import costs you were referring to.
not only should that the industry trying to drive down prices, we have to work with the stakeholders to drive down costs. It's not about something that's not between us and the port regulator and France trying to work out who has the biggest share of the price. It's a question of how do we work with the industry to efficiency in the whole logistics chain. And given that that's together, and that remains as a people that's a major cost driver in the industry and a major source of competitive disadvantage. Move to the middle of the chart, starting with labour, and labour we've identified two key drivers: productivity improvement, that stability to fuel the train. We've given all three of those yellow. This chart was done a few weeks ago. If I read it today, I would probably give the industrial stability a bright red. Because in the meanwhile, we've had significant industrial stability also in the water sector. We've had Toyota flying about for 3 weeks. We've had, we currently have a Goodyear fine industry strike, which is the third week. So labor instability is becoming a red again. Productivity, we've given a yellow. Substantial progress has been made by automakers as well as automotive suppliers in terms of productivity improvement over the last few years, as well as significant investment in training. So progress has been having been made, but nevertheless a key issue remains in those three points. Wage inflation, the last element of the labor pillar, we've shown it red, and I guess the reasons for showing it up here. We're entering next year June, we end up on a 3-year agreement. As you know, the last two cycles of 3-year agreements we have set for significantly higher than CPI wage increases, and the industry simply can't afford to carry on doing this. The previous chart on our global competitiveness, our lack of global competitiveness, should be evidence of the fact that we can't further development of local content and global suppliers is also key for us to get to top 600,000 units a year to 1.2 billion. I think that's an important focus on the board. The last column is dealing more with how we're going to grow demand, because it's only growing production. We have something else to buy these products. And we have to consider that in the world, the market where the growth is happening in the world, and lower cost base will be the capacity is being put to produce those ones. So it's unlikely that we're going to become a major export to India or a major export to China. So we have to also work on growing the sub-Saharan African market and the importance of free trade agreements or preferential trade agreements. Some form of trade arrangements with those countries is important. And finally, we have to also work on growing the local market. If the production capacity grows about 600,000 units a year, it would be difficult to believe that we'd be able to sell all of those 600,000 extra units to the local market. More than 50% of the local market is currently still satisfied by imported vehicles. By the end of this year, also some of the other models we've been going into imports. So we have to not only try and find new export markets, but we have to work on measures to grow the local market. And the APDP doesn't really look at how we're going to grow demand, it's looking at how we're going to grow the competitiveness of the auto sector and start growing production. But at the same time, if we don't grow demand, we need to improve competitiveness and improve capacity will not be utilized. So this chart, it takes a very complicated set of competitive circumstances and globally competitive circumstances and tries to just what are the key fields of activity that we have to work on? We as an industry don't want to always be sending out signals of despair and distress, because that's not going to lead to investment and change which is necessary to improve our competitiveness. But we as an industry do have a very realistic and sober view of how big the challenge is, and we split
Thank you, Madam Chair. In a sense, it is a lot. It is somewhat of a reiteration of what Mr. Powell has presented, and I take it that the party is quite seeing that where they're going, that the heat we are doing in the industry and activity field of the industry. We thought that it might be useful to put some background around what NARCAM stands for and what they seek to achieve. NARCAM is the association representing automotive suppliers in South Africa and has 180 member companies. The suppliers who are NARCAM members produce automotive equipment components, and those go into the making of vehicles and also are used as spare parts. 85% of the production is sold to local vehicle assemblers, 45% is exported, mainly to overseas OEMs, and 20% is for local spare parts. Just some statistics and facts about the suppliers. The production last year was valued at almost 75 billion, which was 10% up from 2010, but still well below their 2008 levels. The employment of suppliers is just over 69,000. It is down from a total of 82,000 at the beginning of 2008. However, the suppliers are the leading creators of employment in our sector, and that you will see from the fact that they employ about double the number of the OEM suppliers. That really is where the opportunity to create jobs lies. Just another important factor to note is that more than half of the local owned suppliers and sub-suppliers are all SMEs. The components and parts which were exported in 2011 are set out there, as you can see, and I don't propose to go into them. They range from catalytic converters to tires, and they go to destinations as far as the EU, which accounted for 26 billion. Africa for 3.9 billion, USA for 3.4 billion, Brazil for 930 million, Mexico 590, Japan 440 million, South Korea, China and India each over 260 million. What we have seen though, Madam Chair, is that there has been a gradual decline of local content over the years. And this is primarily for a number of reasons. The first is that the MIDP and now the ADEP structure allows for the OEM to use duty credit import components duty free. OEMs are also using more multinational suppliers, many of whom assemble components from imported sub-components, and this gives local sub-supply capabilities. And then the issue which Mr. Powell touched on, our cost competitiveness as well. After 2000, the industry trade deficit in building vehicles was 39 billion rand. And as Mr. Powell said, we really need a concerted effort 20 to address the issue of globalization. We do face issues of global competitiveness, and again, Mr. Powell touched upon this. The first issue that affects our competitiveness is that decisions on vehicles and component production and sourcing are made globally, and these are based mainly on price. Again, Mr. Powell touched on this. Local production volumes are very low by local measures, less than 1%, and this impact on extracting economies of scale. Competitiveness is further deteriorated by cost increases beyond the industry control, and these being cost increases in electricity, primarily, wages above inflation, logistic costs, monopolistic material suppliers and export of scrap, and the strong and volatile currency. Further issues that impact on our competitiveness as an industry is subsidies, and low wages, and higher productivity in several low-cost countries, and the power sector, and the luxury on those implementations, which enables them to actually reduce their costs, and these are then targets that are given to local suppliers to match. These subsidies are recognized by many countries who impose additional duties on subsidized parts. Our products are the most expensive in the world because of low productivity and cargo charges. In addition, Madam Chair, we have a significant artisan shortage force, which results in us having to pay premium. For example, we are 7 times higher than what an artisan would earn in Thailand, for example. Cost and value inefficiencies, cost congestion, and cost in safety stock requirements. The last point I've already touched upon. We've also seen over the years the growth of imports. They now make up 30% of the market, from 31% in 2003, and this is the highest in the world, with Australia or any car producing country outside of economic zones. Our import duties of 25% are lower than almost all developing countries, and the same as China, which produces 25 times more vehicles than we do, and the same as the USA, which is on pickups and they produce 5 million. And we are also the only country where duties can be fully rebated by trade. The spare parts for the vehicles that are imported are also imported. And in addition, the government procurement preference, which is applied for local buses, it does not extend to all types of vehicles. Just a quick review of the ATTTL spec. The objective, Madam Chair, as you would have there, and as you would appreciate, is to double production to 1.2 million and to substantially increase localization before associated employment creation. There are, however, barriers, and for what the case in this objective. The first barrier is that there is no volume incentive in the APDP, with OEMs getting the maximum vehicle assembly allowance at 50,000 annual production per company. The production incentive, given a local value added in the form of a duty rate, is smaller than what the VEA is, and it's also given on vehicles exported, which have no component, which no component exclusivity is being paid. Therefore, the more vehicles are exported, the more duty credits will be available to offset duty on components imported for vehicles produced off the local market. Clearly, what this illustrates that the APDP parameters need to be revised urgently, and there are initiatives towards that to really look at the central review. In summary, then, Madam Chair, what we say is that the automotive suppliers are facing their toughest period because of the global nature of the sector, and the power to elaborate on that as well. The anomalies in the APDP, which comes back in 2030, could prevent the long-term objective of achieving the 1.2 million. While we endorse the IPAC general support measures, we have emphasized the importance of addressing the barriers to competitiveness, which we've alluded to, the infrastructure investment requirements, the monopolistic practices, and facilitating improved productivity and skills development. And we need to have a more competitive and stable currency. And we as a sector should work together then on improving competitiveness through structural programs. I think that is a brief overview that I needed to give to the committee. Insofar as the impact of electricity and electricity increases, Madam Chair, there is a delegation from the Eastern Cape, and among those are some of our members, and they will give you more specifics as to how specifically those proposed increases will impact on them. Thank you very much.
Same one.
new Ranger diesel engines manufactured anywhere in the world. So there's a piece of the Eastern Cape in every Ranger manufactured anywhere in the world. We've spent over $3 billion, actually 3.4, in both of our plants in Victoria and Eastern Cape to do this. We have 60,000 to 70,000 vehicle exports annually, and we're at full production to 148 countries around the world. And we have 140,000 of those component sets being exported from our Port Elizabeth engine plant annually on top of those vehicles. And just recently, last month in September, actually 2 months ago now, which is like yesterday, we launched our second shift down in, or up in Silverton, which was not planned. So that was actually beyond our plans, and we hired 800 people in our plant as direct labor, and we have estimated around 1,500 people in the supply base were hired in order to support that. So, and that comes on the back of much stronger demand for our South African Ranger than we expected. The product's done better than we expected, so we've been very happy about that. Okay? I want to talk a little bit about local content. Remember how I said volume drives local content. Our local content per unit on the old Ranger that we were building about 25,000 was around 57%. The new Ranger at closer to 100,000 is at 68% local content. So we were able to grow our local content almost 20% by launching the new Ranger at higher volumes. But even more importantly, our local material volume has increased over 300% from $1.1 billion to $4.5 billion due to this new program. And a significant amount of jobs have been created, not only in our plants, but in the supply base, when you think about tripling our supply buy from our suppliers in South Africa. A couple other things we've done, or the Ranger program has done for the local supply base. We introduced all new suppliers to South Africa. KLT, Global Chassis and Frame Supplier, Magneto, Global Stamping Supplier, Mothersons for injection molding, and we also created a supplier innovation center to help with the AIEC. I'll talk about that in a minute. We also, not only have we introduced new suppliers, but we've also created export opportunities for local suppliers that did not have them before. So we have 17 local suppliers with 14 commodities exporting to our Ranger programs in Argentina and Thailand. So it's been a very good program, not only for Ford Motor Company, but also for the supply base in South Africa. Just to talk about our supplier incubation center for a moment. I'm particularly proud of the supplier incubation center. It was the first one in the automotive industry. And the AIDC and Blue IQ and the IDC partnered with ourselves to launch the Supplier Incubation Center. I think the picture on the bottom gives you an idea of the scale. I mean, you can't even see there's a guy in a red shirt on the left side of that picture. It they do. They do come out on time as well. We fight as hard. And with my other suppliers, I give them a purchase order, and the parts show up when they're supposed to at high quality. With these suppliers, I have to come. And I'm okay with that. I do it all over again because it's the right thing for South Africa. It's the right thing for the automotive industry. But it is very, very difficult. And the reason I wanted to say that is as we move forward with these types of programs, it's important for all of you to know about transportation costs. And this gives you a better idea of where the Thailand plant is, or the Argentine plant is. For inbound, this is all the costs for me to get the parts not only from my local suppliers to my petroleum plant, but also from my global suppliers from Thailand, from Europe, from the U.S. to my plant. And although we're close, much closer to Argentina, we also have almost twice the local content that they do. So we have a much more efficient inbound transportation footprint than they do, but yet they still are much more efficient than we are inbound.
I just want to interrupt for just a minute. Members, look, we haven't expected this, but at the same time, it's here. Will there be a fruitless expenditure as well as everyone's time if we make the cost? So I'm sure you're cognizant that what we need to do then is to remind members originally we were finishing a hot cost. Originally. We cut back an hour when we sold out, you know, and a few others didn't. So it's just a point to keep in mind. And given that we were only going to finish the top off two originally, and still have another meeting in between, we had ordered lunch. So for those of you, myself, who may feel the urge then just to keep things at bay with hunger, we will have something. But I do ask you to accept the position. That this is an important input, and it's purely on that basis. But unfortunately, I was not fully aware of the time or the fact that there was this extra presentation. So, what I'd like to do on your side, Mr. Nehmer, is just to check with you the time that you'll be looking at and see how, because we've still got another presentation coming, and we want to ask our questions. Yes, just give me some ideas.
I have 4 slides left, like 5 minutes. Okay. From a labor relations standpoint, and I mentioned this earlier, these are the lost production days over the last 2 years in South Africa compared to Thailand and Argentina. We have not lost any production days over the last 5 years before we do this again, Detroit, my principals, are going to make a decision. Do we want to invest another $3 or $4 or $5 billion in ranger production in South Africa? Okay, that gives us about a 3-year window to fix this. Right? If we don't close that 5 or 6% gap, I would find it very surprising for Detroit to decide to invest again. Right? So that's our challenge. That's our challenge together. Our improvements in cost and competitiveness would be utilities, service delivery, mobility, getting our workers mobile to work, to get schools, get labor stability is involved in that as well. We need, for lack of a better word, a social contract between labor, management, business, and the government. And we need to trust each other. We need to trust that what we're doing is what's right for the workers, what's right for the country, and what's right for business. And that's something that we have some time to do. We need to have development of appropriate skills to enable triple B, double E targets to be met. We went from a level 8 to a level 6 in the last 2 years. It took 2 years to get from a level 8 to a level 6. And it was hard. We had a task team that once a month came to my operating committee, all my vice presidents, and presented in order to get this to happen. We're concerned with the new proposal that there's 3 items that you have to do. One of them is ownership. We're a multinational. We're not going to have local ownership. Okay? And we will not use front people to do it. I put my foot down and I said, this is to grow a sustainable black community, economic community. South Africa, and frontage people are not going to do that, and we will not support it, okay? If you get 2 out of those 3 strikes, you lose 2 points. I just spent 2 years of sweat and blood to gain 2 points. If I lose 2 of them, I'm going to lose a lot of motivation to keep doing it, aren't I? Right? So we have to be very careful about what we do with triple B and double B. Logistics and efficiency. NAMSA is in collaboration with Transnet and the DTI. We did not attempt to see how the numbers were. They're not pretty. We have a huge logistics cost issue in South Africa. And there are public, like I said, we have 3 years to fix it. There's what, $200 billion or something allocated, according to Mr. Gigabuck, last time I had breakfast with him. And I think we're on the way, but we have to accelerate it. And we have to make sure that automotive is part of it early. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you very much. I'm trying to decide who gave us the good news and who's given us the bad news. It's a little bit more. Somehow we've got lost. I kind of thought we were on the good news at some, the huge challenges of good news, and then you came along. But anyway, these inputs are very constructive, and we are members going to be able to engage all of them. But what I also want to persuade our presenters at this point, rather than cut anything short, what you need to decide on is, yes, I'll give a short response now and a longer one in writing. And something that is going to be necessary. And you're going to know that better than I am. So I would like you to be very strategic as you respond. Right. So over to members of the committee. It's a matter of a wake-up call, as it were. Honourable McIntosh, Honourable Khadevi, Honourable Van der Merwe. Right. At this point.
Madam Chair, I must say I have found these iPad presentations through, in fact, but I do share my colleague from the Mavericks and Phoenix downside of anonymously as suicide when you see some of the problems they have. But I think that it's a great tribute to
do you think we need to
is we have people who, over decades, some of these companies have invested in South Africa, and they have been the best kind of investors. Sure, they're not South Africans, and South Africans are employed, but they have had a lateral impact in terms of growing our country, developing SMEs, and they're an example of a, shall we say, a for-profit business which has brought huge benefits to South Africa. And I just want to tell you guys, we're very thankful for that. And it's not happened in the last 20 years, it's happened over 70, 80 years commitment. I've got one question, though, because I think the presentations speak for themselves. And let me say, I think DTI, with the proposals that they've come, and I've never used all these acronyms. I always say, before, and one of my friends who I would use nameless, this is probably the best acronym, is FO. But the point is that that whatever it is, this program that GTI has got, the PPID, MPAP, whatever it is, I think in fact it's going to work. I think if we work hard, we'll get to 1.2 million vehicles, and that's cheaper. But I've got one question, and we have guys representing the German manufacturers and the American manufacturers, and Mr. Poy representing our components of SMEs. What about a go? That is what worries me. I know a go has been extended, but it's not a free trade agreement. It's a unilateral act of generosity by the United States of America. And it's given us huge opportunities, But there's no security of tenure to pick up on our guys who get in a go, because a go can be taken away. It's not a free trade agreement. But I just wonder if you haven't got any idea of how we would survive a situation where a go was, say, unilaterally withdrawn. And of course, it doesn't matter if it doesn't affect the whole economy.
Whenever we go in the road, they're there in large numbers. I think that's problematic. manufactured in South Africa. I think we need to say that the committee is looking at a report on that. What I am interested in, all of you have said about scale in one way or another. And in the presentation from the supplier sector, there was quite a comprehensive well, in order to get scale, we've got to export, or we've got to find new markets. I mean, I think that's clear. There'll be some
terms of the exports, we have a detailed breakdown on where the exports go to. We take the 285 exports from this year. Just to give you a quick point, the global exports to make 500,000 units, mainly to Africa and Europe. Volkswagen will have about 50,000 exports, mainly to Europe and Japan, Australia. All the members are already expanding their exports to many markets.
Different business makeup, right? So maybe they aren't so The other thing I did add on labor laws, I'm not that familiar, but I think it's a great question. What is it? Is there something legally that drives that difference between South African and Thai and U.S.? And I'm going to follow up on that and get back to you on that one.
Well, I could just announce that from our point of view, logistics costs would be the biggest single thing to name. I think it's relatively easy to be dealing essentially with one institution. And I agree fully with Mr. Mendes' view that I think the difficulty that we have at the national level is cross-state activity seems to be an industrial enablement rather than a process. It's a mindset shift that we need. The second priority would be the supply chain. We have to not underestimate the extension which is a standard depends on the cost competitiveness of the supply chain. Recognizing logistics costs also play a key role in the supply chain. And finally, the issue of energy costs and other inputs into our production process. The issue of fuel productivity improvement and trying to get to export contracts and trying to improve our processes by putting better production systems, by putting in better fuels. That's our daily business. And we have intensive and aggressive plans. All the OEMs in South Africa are pursuing what we can influence in our plants in terms of process improvement, in terms of upskilling the people. There's an unprecedented level of activity and money being invested in things where we are the master of our own destiny, so to speak. And all our plants are globally benchmarked on an ongoing basis. I go to Germany every 6 to 8 weeks, and I have to show my plant's performance indicators against 10 indicators against every other VW plant in the world. 6 to 8 weeks. And it's very difficult when you go there and you've got red robots. The Germans are not so patient. And I'm sure there's a member that has the same problem. No, it's not every 6 to 8 weeks, but there's regular comparison, and then also help. So we're getting help from the global organizations to help us improve the productivity within our plant. But the things we have to influence are the fact of cost rises that are coming from outside of our area sphere of control. But a fully agree with the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. I think maybe it's just one or two issues. I think on the AGOA, I reiterate what Mr. Powell said. If that particular instrument was to disappear, I think that that would put that particular part of the market that have to exist and probably it will disappear. I think there has been talked about it being extended, whether anything has happened formally, I'm not there, I'm sitting here at certain, but I believe that there has been an intention expressed to do so. Insofar as the question from Honourable Mananebe about the breakdown of exports, I think that he set down in the presentation of what components and parts exactly are exported and to which destinations. Can I give you a forecast of what it would look like in the future? Not as I'm sitting here, but that's certainly something we can revert on. The challenge of suppliers and making up time, I'm not sure why there would be that particular problem, but if there are logistic issues, maybe there are logistic issues. Madam Chair, it may just be a question of it just adds to the cost of labor. Okay, because you know if you make up on the weekend there's a cost attached to that that's significantly higher rate. I don't think that that's something we can ignore. It's one of the hard issues that we have to face. That if people stay away and they raise up outside of the hours, it does cost and there might be a little bit of reluctance to further add on to the cost. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if that's about anything that needs immediate response, but we will obviously go through this and not come and even if we feel that we need to amplify anything, we certainly will be sent to our county. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Powell.
There was one, two further questions that we haven't answered completely yet. The one was how do we create sales? The first thing we mustn't underestimate is one of the key reasons we have an automotive manufacturing industry in South Africa is not for export. The key reason we have an industry that must be to supply a growing local market. And I think what the APPD hasn't addressed is how do we grow the local market? How do we grow the local market from 600,000 to 900,000 to a million? If we can continue growing the local market at a rate of 7 to 8% a year from the current rate, 20% tax on 600,000 cars is the same as 10% tax on 1.2 million cars. In fact, it's not. The taxes, the cumulative effect of taxes on 1.2 million cars is going to be much higher because of the multiplier effect through the economy, through the supply chain, through the retail of the art, so the servicing of cars. So we need to look at it as a model. And I worked for 4 years, 5 years in Brazil, 2003-2004, for four cars as vice president of operations in Brazil. And Brazil had many programs. When I was in Brazil, the market was 1.2 million. The market in Brazil now is 3.5 million. Part of the reason is the economy is going strongly, but some of the reason is they're looking pragmatically from time to time at how to drive up demand by often by reducing taxes and using that as a stimulus, but in a sustainable way. Not in a way where you reduce taxes for 1 year and the next year the taxes go back, but that tends to pull demand from 1 year to the next. So the issue of sustainable growth is an issue we must look at. And remember, we don't exist at the export. We need the export to make the production viable. But the real reason we're here is first and foremost the supply of this big growing local market.
I would like to know that that's an important issue, if you would expand on those points that you've been raising now, because they are important, not very significant. I want to close with now Honourable Hill Lewis.
Thank you very much. Just on the local market, I wonder what effort or resources your combined company put into marketing a kind of buy local initiative through South Africa. I'll tell you anecdotally that you know, if you go to a local Barron's or McCarthy or anyone of the big dealerships that sell your vehicles, they won't be able to tell you, or somebody might be able to, they won't be able to tell you which of their vehicles are made in South Africa and which are not. And the interesting thing of the market is really interested in buying South African made vehicles. Just as I would be, and I know that many other people would be, but it's very difficult to get that information. So I think in combination with the DCI, there needs to be some resources behind it, a buy South African
initiative. There's a question response to that now, but I think there are a number of issues. You heard the tenor of questions throughout the morning. And what you've given us is of great value. It's going to be of even more value if we can get in writing, you know, the electronic version of that, Mr. Nemeth, because my memory not being able to capture everything in my head this morning, okay? So thank you very much on that score. It really is a marathon morning somehow now, but it wouldn't be fair for us not. It would be fair for us to ignore shatterproof. I don't know where they are. They're quite shattered by this time. Let me see where they are. You're there. All right. And you've survived. But, Mr. Hill, you...
I look forward to sharing with you today a few things, basically a brief introduction to company. We were established in 1935 and the PG Group in 1898. We are a producer of automotive laminated and surface products that is shatterproof as a division. We supply into the domestic and export aftermarket, and notice we will be only South African manufacturer that supplies the OEMs directly in terms of automotive glass. Glass is shaped by bending in electrical furnaces, making us a high energy user, which is why the electricity issue is so important to us. The group, PG Group, of which we are a division, invested R1 billion in 2007 for a dedicated automotive clothesline. I know that R1 billion might not sound a lot after hearing the OEM's presentation, but for a little private company, it's a significant amount of money. As a division, we shatterproof the division and employs almost 1,300 people, 1,279. And 954, close to 1,000 of those are employed in the Nelson Mandela Bay Metro. Our capital employed is R500 billion, and we spend about R30 million per annum on fixed investments. Currently, we invest in R40 million to improve our competitiveness on door glasses. The PG Group's capital employed is around $3 billion. We supply all the major OEMs in the country, so as I mentioned before, important to the supply chain, being the only manufacturer supplying auto glass in South Africa. Just a bit on our footprint in terms of sales, you can see 40%, and we'll just focus on the 2012 forecast, 40% of our turnover to OEMs. Exports aftermarket 30% and domestic aftermarket 22%. Exports is for us a filler as well. We certainly here to supply into the South African market first of all. And we just, to improve economies of scale, export the balance of our capacity. We have a safety critical product, so obviously we have to comply to be able to supply OEMs. There are various standards we have to comply with, and they just listed there for information and well on those. The crux of the matter are electricity costs. In 2007, our electricity costs were $23.8 million, which was 5% of our operating expenses. And you can see in 2011 that's gone up to by 213% to just over $50 million, $50.6 million, and now 9% of our costs. If we continue, 2012 is an annualized number based on the October year to date, but if we continue with the 16% discussed for the next 3 years, that would take us to 369% of the 2007 base, and 14% of our operating costs will be then made up of electricity costs. It's really not sustainable for us. We're beyond the point of it being sustainable. In terms of just the table at the bottom just shows that we use on average 5 MVA a month, making us a high energy user in all our plants. Just to have another view of that, sales since at the 2007 base level at 100, the blue bar, you can see that it's now 82% where it was in 2007, and that as our competitiveness has been eroded, and also the downturn globally, which has affected our exports. If you look at the red bar, you'll see, or maroon bar, you'll see that electricity costs, on the other hand, have increased by 236%. The combined effect of that is that we costed us R831 a square meter produced automotive glass in 2007, and now costs R24 a square meter for this year. Just a bit about what we've done to improve competitiveness. I think it's important to understand that we need to regulate the things we can control. We've invested in technology for competitiveness improvement. For 2005 to 2012, we averaged about R30 million a year. I mentioned the R30 million was dedicated to automotive first line. We have a technical agreement with one of the biggest glass manufacturers in the world. We're not a multinational ourselves, obviously a local private company. So we do need support, technical support, from Central Bank Security. unfortunately changed 221 people since 2010 as we take down because we're not competitive. We've absorbed financial losses to avoid closure and further related job losses. Our shareholders have had dividends for a number of years, obviously in that sort of environment. We've also leveraged loans to support the business during our turnaround and capital investments required to improve competitiveness. So we've recently, last year, got a $1 billion loan from the IDC and added that to the group's exposure of $1.1 billion. Our shareholders have also invested a further $400 million. As far as electricity costs are concerned, we've engaged the Nelson Mandela Bay Metro since last year, mid-2011, and intend to secure assistance in terms of reduced electricity costs. You may have been told already, we're part of a group of companies that have done this engagement together. It's Nico, Autocast, Sovereign Foods, and Board have all been involved with us. We've had no success. At one time, we thought there would be success when the municipality agreed to set up a separate rate for high electricity users. That rate turned out to be somewhat more expensive to some of us and more or less the same to everybody else. So it didn't help our cause. And we've had no improvement on that issue to date. So after much discussion, there'll be no progress, and some of these companies, as I tell, are in severe financial situation. So just a bit on why the current and planned electricity costs are unsustainable. As I mentioned, we are high energy users. We operate in a competitive environment and we've got a good understanding of that environment from what NAMSA and NAFTAM have presented. But really, we need to be closely competitive for the OEM. We need to provide long-term productivity improvements. So we actually have to show price reductions. And it's impossible to do that when the cost cushion exceeds, you know, what is realistically achievable in terms of productivity improvements. We compete on a global platform where low-cost countries such as China, Thailand, and India or others who are not exposed to these structural cost increases are our competitors. I think interestingly what people don't often realize is that the OEMs therefore can't accept those price increases. We can't just cost on to them. And if they were to be accepted, it would only turn out that when one does a benchmarking review, we would not be competitive relative to other countries. So any price relief would be shorter and not sustainable because it affects the competitiveness of the supply chain. As mentioned, you've heard about the economies of scale issue. We are disadvantaged by relatively low economies of scale, which is highly punitive to manufacturing costs. Autoglass in particular, no exception. Our costs of changeover are relatively high relative to our cost of production. Inherent in the process. So we are severely punished or disadvantaged by the short term impact. Shell Group is currently making a loss, and we are cross-subsidized by the group. I guess you could argue that we weren't part of the group in existence. And I guess the group, at any point in time, should be deciding whether they extend the automotive team. Our discontinuation will impact the yearly on local content and trade balance in the local market industry. So in conclusion, as far as electricity rates are concerned, they are unaffordable, they are unsustainable, and they will result in high energy use of discontinuing operation. And in particular here in the Eastern Cape, there's been a lot of talk and I think they've been about it from IGEC from some of the other presenters. Does the markup being applied by the Nelson Mandela Bay Metro on electricity? So it really is a problem. We approached them, our request was a special tariff for high energy users, and we see to that, we see to that the right answer. And that will really promote industrial competitiveness for the region. And then, you know, the other alternative is municipalities can't provide those competitive rates, then we must be allowed to buy that from the stock. And if thank you. I'm invited to come and see our plants, to talk to our people. We've got people who have had years where they didn't have wage increases and salary increases. So it will be an eye opener for you to see what's happening in our factories. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It would seem as if we were only given your first name.
Okay, that's Thomas.
I know, we have a first, Thomas, for some reason. That's different. Thank you very much for that input. From what I'm understanding, that's a small to medium a company employing 900 odd people there. Okay. Thank you very much. Members, it's over to yourself. You've highlighted that Thomas has highlighted key issues. Honourable Hill Lewis, yes? Anyone else? Right, Honourable Hadley.
Thank you very much, Mr. Thomas. The thing about electricity costs in South Africa, because of the municipal surcharge, is that they are effectively competitive. If you haven't got that, Nelson Mandela Metro, why haven't you both of them been gone to a municipality, taken your smart to a municipality with the electricity rate cheaper? Because as we know, there are a number of things, not only the most expensive in the country. The second question then is, do you know electricity costs? As you said, it makes up currently 9% of your cost base, and electricity increased about 12% in a couple of years. But that can't be the only reason then that you are not making a profit. What are the other things that are keeping you uncompetitive?
Was competitiveness internationally. We do benchmark ourselves against other glass manufacturing companies. We know that in terms of some technological issues, actually a similar answer to the one I just gave, is that there are things that we do in terms of investment to improve our competitiveness. We also need to improve our productivity, our labor productivity, and we're doing that through assisting our people with training, and of course also the investment I referred to. But some of them are prohibitive costs that we refer to, again, remain just transport and labor, which in terms of a cost level is hard for us to deal with. But we continue to understand the differences in terms of our process efficiency relative to our competitors and working on improving that. Absolutely. Thank you. The last one, I just apologize, that toughened and tempering is actually the same. Toughened and tempering, laminating is different. They both use electrical furnaces to heat up glass to about 600 degrees, so the amount of energy consumed in both are probably similar. In terms of the plants, we have two major plants in Port Elizabeth and one major plant in Karankua, north of Victoria. While we focus on the plants in Port Elizabeth, they procure electricity from the Nelson Mandela Metro, where in current world we supply directly by this problem. So the rate is cheaper. Is that how you
want
it? Doesn't take it in on very small users. They basically do add-on to glass and not actually to the actual form of the glass.
Right. Mr. Thomas, it looks as if we have exhausted some of the questions for the moment. There may well be questions that arise if members begin to assimilate them and the portfolio committee secretaries will contact you in this regard. But certainly we wouldn't want to import this because it would be useful to know what the cost is of importing these this glass, the cost. It's possible for you to prepare such a matrix here. So using it if a country imported it, like we have with the other areas for the motor car and car components, you know, cars imported it and those produced here. You can give us those figures and we may be able to do a better understanding ourselves of what you may be saving the country. Apart from the fact that you're creating jobs, you know, that kind of thing. So, we do appreciate these ladies coming, and also for your patience in coming to the part where you actually share with us this information. And we do regard production plants such as Shatterproof, which are producing essential components or things very, very important.
Thank you very much. We would like to be here. As I said, the end is very important to us that we get assistance on this matter. So thank you very much.
Right. We are going to look into it. I don't want to preempt the committee's position on the full matter because, you know, we're going to be doing deliberations, etc. But thank you very much. And to all those who did come here this morning and share with us some of their achievements, but also the challenges they're currently facing and their contribution to industrialization in South Africa and the creation of employment. I would like to just thank the acting DDG, Garth Strachan, and his team. I'm only aware here of Mr. Phillips, but I know there are four of you sitting here. Am I correct? And if you just introduce the other members for the record.
Sure. Thank you, ma'am. And Kululi Mlota is the chief director of Autos. Dukitwa Napai is the acting chief director of industrial policy. And in fact, earlier, Abisha Tembo is the chief director of our clothing, textiles, leather, and footwear chief director.
Thank you very much indeed. Now, and thank you for being here. You can see how vital this is because you're going
colour. In other words, it's almost pointless because it comes out black. So it is not helping us, and we're under pressure. I'm putting that on the record as well. So that it's quite clear we struggled for 3 months against them without any success. But it may persuade the powers that be to issue every one of an iPad, because it is suggested that we electronically utilize equipment in the room. So that's going to require a laptop or an iPad for every single member. So we may be able to push for iPads. Having said that for the record, we do have lunch, so don't worry about that. But I will be away. And I know the relationship, professionally speaking, the committee has with our list manages somehow to do more work. A really successful relationship you've developed on your committee. I'm not sure what your measures are that you take for the foot. I'm not really here when you chair. But I'm asked to take over on the 14th of November, which is a Wednesday. And you can be assured of finishing on time. And then again on Friday the 16th. Again. But there may be some rejig and move intellectual down in order to take something up. But we won't leave from the Friday. That is an absolute assurance. So let me leave it in his hands. He may come up with something more creative. The main thing is the debate is on the 22nd, which is a Thursday. And we're praying we don't get the graveyard shift. So everyone is trying to do that. The other thing is that we do to consider the ICAP report on the 21st. And I'd like us to think of this quite seriously. This is a very important thing of public hearings. We may wish to do, which we did do, I think, in 2009 or 10, publish a preliminary report, on what we've done to indicate that X and Y and Z